stop me on that.
Good going.
Oh, someone else got four stars.
Yeah.
Hey, Troy.
Like I said, we're, if you need a key
for what?
I'll turn it.
We're talking about all the friends around.
Larry, do I sign this? This one here? Yeah, oh, I got it right here.
Trouble. I see another guy in a room with four stars in his column.
And you know what? I need to talk to you later today.
Uh-oh. When the attorney's got to talk to you, something's wrong.
Carson City Board of Supervisors will now convene. Alan, will you take the roll, please?
Supervisor Williamson. Supervisor Aldean.
Here.
Supervisor Livermore.
Here.
Supervisor Staub. Mayor Texera.
Here.
You have a quorum present, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Alan. Would you all rise, please?
That's okay.
While you're there, Shelly, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Would you remain standing? Father Jeff Paul. There you go.
All right.
From St. Peter Episcopal Church. Good morning, Father.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of the board, guests and staff. Let us pray. Gracious and ever-living God, behold and visit our fair city. Bless the Board of Supervisors and the staff who serve Carson City. Enable us to eliminate poverty, prejudice, and oppression, that peace may prevail with righteousness and justice with order. Grant that all people who live and work in Carson City, men and women, the elderly and the young, the homeless and the destitute, from different cultures and with differing talents, may find with one another the fulfillment of their humanity. In your name we pray.
Amen. Thank you, Father. Do we have any minutes to approve?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. You have minutes of January 3rd, 08, August 19th, 08.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The regular board. That's the liquor.
January 3rd.
Yeah,
January
3rd. Alan, you know what you're doing. Just proceed. You're all right.
And August 21st, by
okay, Shelley, do you have any comments on the minutes?
Mr. Mayor, I just have a few clerical corrections to the minutes of August 21st, but I'll share those with the recording secretary after the meeting. There's
very good.
Nothing substantive.
Nothing substantive. Any other comments on the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll do it. Mr. Mayor, I move to approve the minutes of the Carson City Board of Supervisors meeting dated January 3rd, 2008, as presented, the special meeting of August 19th, 2008, as presented, and the minutes from the meeting of August 21st, 2008, as amended based on some minor clerical corrections.
Second.
If most may have a second, any comments on the question? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. I'm going to take a board report at this point in time by Supervisor Richard Staub. Richard, I believe you've got some work to do.
Thank you.
I don't know if this is the first or second time I sat on this side of the podium, but good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Mayor, members of the board, Richard Staub. I have with me Bob Thrower. I met Bob a few years ago when we both served on Community Council on Youth. And we're here to honor an individual by the name of Frank J. Snopko, who died on Sunday. He is a long-term resident of Carson City, Nevada. He built the Carson Lanes, which Mr. Frank is not the first bowling alley in Carson City. And he operated for several years. He also built the Hardman House Hotel downtown and operated that. He owned several properties throughout town. With his passing, his family, who was represented by Mr. Thrower and his wife Debbie for a long period of time, approached me and asked what types of organizations in Carson City might be appropriate benefactors for the estate that Mr. Snopko acquired during his lifetime. And after discussing various organizations in Carson City, we came up with a selection of organizations that really would have substantial impact upon residents of Carson City. And in doing that, several organizations came to the top of the cream. And with Frank's desires and the family's desires being considered, it was decided that $100,000 would be donated to the Boys and Girls Club. And you saw that in the newspaper today. Totally unforesaw and certainly a benefit to an organization that serves over 1,600 children in Carson City and who is in a building phase and trying to desperately obtain enough money, funds, to finish their new facility. So the $100,000 buying through Bob and his wife Debbie and the family, Dan, David, and Jackie, will go for building purposes only. It was also decided that a donation to the city would be appropriate, believe it or not, and so the family agreed to donate $100,000 to Carson City, which is somewhat unique. And in our discussions, we again wanted to select organizations within Carson City government or related to Carson City government that had the most impact on our citizens. And so it was decided that Parks and Recreation, which serve our youth and our whole community, would receive $25,000. Because Bob and I served on CCOY for several years, and we realized that that is a clearinghouse to provide funds to various organizations that help youth in need, youth at risk, youth in education, we felt $25,000 should go to CCOY. We also believe that the library, obviously, is always in need of funds, and so we selected the library as a recipient, the foundation of $25,000 to assist them. And lastly, we selected the Senior Citizens Center because they are always in need of funds for their Meals on Wheels program and for the various other programs they provide to our seniors. So in selecting those four organizations, we really established a gamut of age groups from youth to seniors to use $100,000 to benefit for the people they serve. And lastly, Frank wanted some money to go to the Advocates for Cancer Care, and so $20,000 was set aside for them. And I am happy to report that those checks were delivered in my office yesterday, and we had a small ceremony. And I would like to go ahead and introduce Bob Thrower, and he can go ahead and say a few words.
Do you want to read the proclamation?
Sure, I'll be happy to. The proclamation reads, Proclamation in Honor and Recognition of Frank Snopko. Whereas the Carson City Board of Supervisors deem it important and proper to recognize and honor those members of our community, past and present, who exemplify the spirit of service by contributing selflessly to the welfare of others. And whereas Frank Snopko, a 31-year Carson City resident, best known for building and owning one of the first bowling alleys, was a very successful developer and businessman. He loved Carson City, its citizens, giving and supporting many of charities. And whereas Frank was born on December 3rd, 1918 in Tacoma, Washington, and grew up on a farm near Puyallup, Washington, where he helped wherever and whenever he could. He began working at $2 a day at age 18, milking cows and cleaning stalls at 3:30 a.m. at a farm he reached by crossing a cemetery, earning the kind of money took the fear of dark away from anyone in those days. And whereas Frank married a wonderful woman, Charlotte, they had three children. After spending numerous years in Washington, lived in other areas like Mexico, Hawaii, before moving to Carson City. And whereas Frank was both ambitious and knew the value of a dollar, and his money grew to a very large sum, but by all means, he was not a grandstander, and upon his death, September 14, 2008, he made another selfless wish to continue giving to this community with these love gifts, $25,000 to the Carson City Library, $25,000 to the Carson City Senior Citizen Center, $25,000 to the Carson City Parks and Rec Department, and $25,000 to the Community Council on Youth. Now, therefore, be it resolved on this 18th day of September, that we, the members of the Board of Supervisors, do hereby extend this proclamation and our sincerest appreciation to the family of Frank Schnapko in recognition of his selfless contributions and support to Carson City and its residents.
All right.
Hello, my name is Bob Thrower, and I appreciate all the work that Mr. Staub has done. And some of these charities that I highly believe in with the Community Council on Youth, if I could ask the board and the mayor, please, to continue to support those folks, Community Council on Youth especially, our Parks and Recreation. I highly believe in the theater, of course, as I used to work for Mitch, but you'll put it in the right direction.
Absolutely.
As of Mr. Staub. And the Senior Citizen is a wonderful place, and we're glad Frank is very glad in his family is to represent the kids from small to old, and that's what he wanted to do, and he's Mr. Staub has helped me get to that point. And the library is always in need and always a great community facility, and we appreciate you supporting all those groups in the future. Boys and Girls Club, continue to support them like you do, and I appreciate it very much. And once again, I look forward to having Richard Staub on the board for 4 more years for all his hard work over the years, and that's about it, and I appreciate it. And the Snopko family, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Could take this.
Do we have any public comments on non-agendized items? Just raise your hand. John?
Yes. Mayor, supervisors, guests, my name is John Wagner, and I am a candidate for Assembly District 40, and I have some literature if anybody wants it. The question is, did I just make a political speech, or did I just convey information? This is the question that we have going before the Ethics Committee probably tomorrow or Monday. Is the sheriff imparting information, or is he campaigning on public property in violation of NRS 281A250, I believe is the one. Now, somebody asked me, was I going to go after the mayor because of question one? And the answer is no, because he's only basically being dragged along, I think, by the mayor, or by the chief.
Nobody drags me along, pal.
Someone drags you along. Well, you've been invited, so make it look more legitimate, maybe. You're a little heavy to drag along.
You got that right.
I have no complaint whatsoever with the supervisors who are running for re-election because they have their opponents there as well. So this is a discussion between the opponents and it's fair and square. However, when it comes to the fire chief is an employee of the city. He is not elected. Therefore, he answers to everybody up on the dais there, right? Am I correct?
Yes.
He answers to you. Okay, but basically you answer to the Board of Supervisors. Now, should he be using his office and being promoting? He comes out of the same thing as an employee, public employee, and he is promoting a ballot measure, the same thing under the same resolution that I did. I would like to see that stop. I don't know if he's using the firehouses for his campaign or not. I'll have to go check that out after I leave here today. But I think it's violation of the spirit of the law, if nothing else. No, there's no money being expended directly, but power isn't exactly free. Sierra Pacific doesn't give it away. Space is not normally free. If you have to go and rent an office, if someone gives you office space, like maybe Supervisor Aldean has space, and so does Supervisor Staub, if they were to give office space, that's called in-kind contributions, which must be listed on the C&E expense report that you have to file with the Secretary of State or with the county. So basically, then this is in-kind thing to use in the meeting room. If they want to use a meeting room, they can go down to the Plaza Motel. There's Gold Dust West, and of course we've got the Nugget. And they could rent a room and do all the campaigning they want without any problem at all. I understand there's a pact that's been formed in favor of that question, they could go out and rent a room and rent space and go out there and do all the campaigning they want. But I find it's very offensive to me that they're using my part of the community, public areas. I own a part of this building, I suppose, the same as everybody else does. Same thing is true with the sheriff's department office. The sheriff's office does not belong to the sheriff, it belongs to the people of our county. And after that, I suppose I've spoken too long already, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any other citizens' comments on non-agendized items? Yes, sir, come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and Board of Supervisors and support staff. My name is Alan Dorway, and I'm the Associate Pastor of the Presbyterian Church here in Carson City. And I would like to come before you today to discuss some questions and some thoughts that I had regarding a September 7th article in the Nevada Appeal called No Vacancy. This article startled me into asking some questions on the Carson City Code, which limits people from staying in a motel for longer than 1 month. Now, here are some answers that I've discovered, which I'm sure we are all very familiar with. First, we all know that the agencies working with people who are in need are already taxed to the limit. These agencies who are serving the families and the individuals who need assistance do not have adequate funding, resources, or hours to help those in the system already, let alone if that base grew overnight. Second, Carson City does not have adequate transitional housing. Fish has 6 houses which are used for that purpose, and that is a wonderful asset to our community, but we could still use more. Third, there is a legitimate need for this code to be enforced in our motels. People are selling drugs in our motels. These perpetrators endanger our community by their illegal activities, and they need to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And the sheriff's office needs to be supported in their efforts to stop this kind of trafficking. Some motels are not paying the appropriate taxes, and this needs to be rectified. And some of the living conditions in the motels are inhumane and a health code violation. These conditions, whether for individuals, families, or guests in our area, need to be changed for the health and the well-being of anyone staying in our motels. And we know that due to disability, lack of job, or other circumstances, individuals, seniors, and families are using the motels on Carson Street as a barrier between a sustainable living and a security deposit in an apartment and the street. So what can we do? We need to thank the many agencies and the people who care for and envision a day when sustainable housing, available health care, and equal employment will lead to dignity and life for all. We should be thankful for the police and the legal system, which hold those who break the laws by selling drugs in areas where decent humans are trying to live accountable. And we need to continue to think outside the box for ways to provide for those who do not have sustainable housing in our area. Part of the solution may come from later, from the Capital Circles of Initiative by Move the Mountain as a presentation upcoming in the agenda. However, this is only part of the solution. I would encourage the continued dialogue between agencies, concerned citizens, church groups, motel and apartment managers, and our city leaders over the issues of the city code and how to help people transition into permanent housing. Maybe the Carson City Code could be reviewed and changed to hold motels accountable without continuing to punish those who are in need. I do not know what the future will hold. I only ask that this Board of Supervisors not forget the many vulnerable in our city and continue to seek creative solutions to our problems, whether it's here, the 10-year plan, Move the Mountain, or wherever. I urge this board to continue to seek those solutions, because I believe in a day when all of God's children will be able to live in peace and dignity with one another. Thank you for this time.
Thank you for your comment. Are there any other comments? Are there any other comments on the citizen comments? Seeing none, we're going to Shelley, this is yours. Why don't you introduce it?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As some of you may know, in March of 2006, this board adopted a resolution to support the development and implementation of a 10-year plan to address homelessness. through the work of Health and Human Services, and we have some people in the audience from Health and Human Services, and I appreciate them being here this morning, we decided that the most manageable approach to the problem would be to work to prevent homelessness. Fish, as Alan alluded to, is certainly working hard to provide accommodations for people who have already slipped into homelessness. But I think we know statistically that it's far more cost-effective to prevent a problem than to deal with the aftermath of a problem. So today we are very privileged to have the CEO of Move the Mountain. Move the Mountain is an organization, a private nonprofit organization that was established in 1992. With the mission of inspiring and equipping communities to end poverty. We have contracted with Move the Mountain to assist us in launching the Circles Initiative. We call it the Capital City Circles Initiative, and which basically consists of two components, the Guiding Coalition, which works with families in Carson City who are attempting to elevate themselves out of poverty, and a Board of Directors, which is a nonprofit, actually it evolved out of HealthSmart. It was a nonprofit organization raising money to support the Circles Initiative. And I want to publicly express my appreciation to a couple of organizations who have already stepped forward to provide funding for the Circles Initiative. It's largely supported through grant funding and private donations. St. Peter's, Father Jeff, of course, provided the invocation this morning, has so far donated $15,500. Kemmer Kempfer, $2,500. City National Bank, through the Community Reinvestment Act, $5,000. And they will be actually issuing a challenge to other similar organizations in the community, hoping that additional donations will be forthcoming. And with that, I'd like to ask Scott Miller from Move the Mountain to come forward and make a presentation to the board.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Supervisors, support staff. Move the Mountain was started in 1992 by the Mid-Iowa Community Action Agency in Marshalltown, Iowa. We had done an informal study talking to 5,000 people we had worked with over the many years and asked them, did you get out of poverty? Did our programs help you get out of poverty? About 90% of the families that we talked to did not get out of poverty over a five-year period. We asked those that did, which of the programs had the biggest impact? For the most part, people married somebody with a job. So we got very concerned about the fact that our programs were not intentionally set up to get people out of poverty, nor were they having that kind of success in helping people make all the steps necessary to move out of poverty. So in 1992, with a grant from the N.E. Casey Foundation based out of Baltimore, we undertook a 10-year study and implementation of pilots that we thought might have a key. What are the secrets to getting people out of poverty? And so since then, we have put together an array of programs and a number of partners, which are outlined in the material that I've given to you. But I want to talk first about what kind of price is this country paying for having poverty. Right now, I can tell you that 70% of all the students in this country graduate from high school, 30% don't. For each student, this is 1.2 million kids, by the way, dropping out every year from our schools. The difference in income for a community is $9,634 per dropout. This adds up to $329 billion a year lost in over the lifetime of these kids. It's $329 billion. For every year, every graduating class, we lose 30%. That's what this economy loses out on in terms of revenue. We could save $17 billion in Medicaid by graduating these kids. So let's look at the connection between poverty and graduation. Children from poor families drop out six times more than kids from higher income households. The Center for American Progress testified at the House Ways and Means Committee last year from a year-long study with a number of universities that said that the cost of raising kids in poverty is now reaching $500 billion a year. Now, if you take 12.9 million kids that are formally on the official poverty guideline list this year, that's $38,000 per child per year. That's the fallout cost of raising kids in poverty. Let's just bring it here locally. You have approximately 13,400 children under the age of 19 in Carson City. According to the census data of 2000, 2,623 of the children are in poverty. So I haven't yet done the math on that, but $38,000 times that number of kids is a lot of money that this community could realize in a positive way by getting highly intentional about lifting families out of poverty. So we have now put together three generations of a model. The first generation, which I've listed out here the results of, was just called Circles of Support. It's in about 25 different communities in Iowa and Minnesota. That first pilot began in 1996. We took a snapshot when the state gave us about $230,000 a year for a 30-month period and realized that we were giving the state back $491,000 in cash benefits that they weren't having to pay out. We helped 58 of the 108 families that were referred to us off welfare in 10 months. That was the average getting off time. And they've been on welfare for almost 4 years, each of them, on average. So when you take a look at the earned income that they brought into the community, it reached nearly $1 million. So the return on investment for the first iteration of our model was 2-to-1 reduced welfare benefits, 4-to-1 new earned income. We then formed a partnership with Ruby Payne's organization called AHA Process. They have, they're doing about 2,500 workshops a year across the country. And in each of these workshops, people in the audience ask, okay, now that we understand some of the reasons why people are in poverty, the different rules that people are living by if they've been raised in poverty versus the rules of being in school, the rules of being in a job, what do we do about this? So Circles is now created a second generation of a model, which you're working with right now, which involves the idea of teaching people, both who are trying to get out of poverty and those who are trying to employ and educate people from poverty, what are the hidden rules of both of these different cultures. Once a community understands this, everything goes better. So what we're seeing now are private nonprofits being set up by very successful business people, one in Cincinnati, for example, called Cincinnati Works, which I've listed here. They are putting about 800 people into jobs right off of the streets, highly underemployed, unemployed people, and they have an 87% retention rate for a year. They study this for a year. What's different? What's the magic about Cincinnati Works? Number one, they understand these hidden rules of class. Number two, 70% of the resources go into the retention part of the process versus most government approaches, which puts 90% of the resources into training and placement. By shifting the attention to retention, more people are getting out of poverty and staying out of poverty. Secondly, they are committed to 200% of the poverty guidelines. Right now, the current poverty guidelines suggest that if you make $20,000 or more, you're not in poverty. But reality tells us that it's closer to $40,000 for a family of four to make it. So Cincinnati Works commits to a lifelong relationship with these families. They intend to spend 4, 5, 6 years, whatever's necessary, to help them get into jobs, keep those jobs, and become self-sufficient at 200% of poverty guidelines. Up in Michigan, in Grand Rapids, we have a partnership now with Cascade Engineering. This is a company that had a 29% retention rate for welfare to work programs. They found that horrible. So they put the hidden rules of class into their shop, created a whole new way of thinking about supporting people to stay in these jobs, and that retention rate is now at 97%. They have saved the government almost $1 million every year, and they're saving their own company $500,000 a year. Both Cincinnati Works and Cascade Engineering are examples of what happens when private companies realize that they can do something about making sure that people who are coming out of poverty or have had an experience of poverty are successful in the workplace. And the amount of money they can save by doing this is just beginning to be realized to be enormous. Cincinnati Works has 200 businesses working with them. The founder, Dave Phillips, was the former Chamber of Commerce president for Cincinnati last year. He is well plugged in, well respected, and has saved Fifth Third Bank, as one example, $480,000 in turnover for a small donation that this Fifth Third Bank makes to this private company or this private nonprofit. So what I'd like to suggest to you today is that I believe that we now have the tools in our country to dramatically reduce poverty. And in fact, I think we could actually eliminate it in the next 50 years. But it requires a ferocious leadership, and it requires people in positions as yours to take the position that we must commit to 200% of poverty guidelines with whatever we do. Our retention rates have to be pursued and measured for at least 1 year. And then we have to have circle initiatives in the communities that feed all of the enterprises that we have in our area. So if there's a small circles community to be found for 25 people at a time, they will help each other accelerate their way out of poverty, and they'll make it much better for their kids. And again, I want to just reiterate, children being raised in poverty is not a good thing, and we're paying an enormous price for that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And I want to emphasize something that's unique about this program. It is a program that promotes self-sufficiency. As we're fond of saying, it's a hand up, not a hand out. And it helps to these people preserve their dignity while improving their circumstances. So I think it's a wonderful program, and I hope the board will remain committed. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. We've got an introduction.
Yes, I'm going to start retiring temporary HR director Bob to introduce our new HR director.
Hi, Stacy Gilman from fire department and previously the interim human resources director. Over the last 3 months, I've had the opportunity to serve the city as the interim human resources director, and I must say on a personal level I learned a great deal, but I think mostly I learned what we all know, but in a very personal nature, it was reaffirmed for me that we have a very dedicated group of department directors, division directors, and a very dedicated group of employees here, and how important it is to foster and continue to develop and promote that. It's vital that we have someone at the helm of our human resources department that is knowledgeable, understanding, skillful, and all of those things, because that human resources department impacts everybody in the community. Not as directly maybe as the services I provide as a fire chief, but certainly a tremendous impact indirectly on the services everyone gets in our community. So I am very happy to say that after a rather extensive search, we had nearly 100 applicants, and we used a screening process that involved an outside review panel, an internal review panel, and some serious investigation into the top candidates. We have been able to select someone who has experience in both the private sector and the public sector, and I'll let her tell you more about that, but I'm very happy to introduce Jennifer Schultz, who's your new human resources director.
Thank you, Stacy. Good morning to you all.
Good morning, and welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here, and I'm thrilled to be
not as thrilled as Stacy is to have you here.
I am truly thrilled to be joining the Carson City team. And I am a native of Carson City, grew up here, graduated from Carson High School. I went away for college to Arizona and returned, and I've spent the last 18 years in human resources leadership positions here in Northern Nevada. I spent 10 years with Renown in their human resources department and leading that. I then went to St. Mary's, where I was vice president of human resources. And most recently, I come to you from the state, the Legislative Council Bureau. And I am very much looking forward to serving all of you and the employees of Carson City and our whole community. And I want to also thank Stacy very much. He has made the transition very smooth for me coming on board this week. And on behalf of the entire HR team, we want to thank him for his support during this transition.
Well,
any questions?
Yeah, so you've been in Carson City. You're a native.
I am. I moved here right before high school.
Okay. Well, that's close enough. And you know that Stacy had an ulterior motive. You know, just he couldn't wait to get you in there. And we welcome you. We hope your tenure is a heck of a lot longer than the last four we've had in place. And maybe.
As do I.
Okay. Well, Walk, we wish you nothing but the best. And for the short time that my office, please feel free to come in. I'm available for any way I can assist.
Thank you all.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Wait a minute.
Well, I just want to mention that I got a call a number of months ago from Lauren Malkowitz at Legislative Council Bureau, and he was just effusive, I mean, with his praise for this woman. I just sat there and listened for about half an hour as he, waxed poetic about how capable this woman is, and so I was very impressed and passed her name on to Larry Werner, and I'm thankful that she was interviewed and that she's been hired as our new human resources director.
Well, thank you.
Nice to have you here.
Lauren's
Jennifer.
Probably watching now, so thank you, Lauren, as well. Lauren was my boss at the LCB.
Well, thank you. Once again, welcome.
Thank you.
The district attorney.
I'd just like to say one thing. It's been a real pleasure to work with
Chief Giomi over the past couple months. He has done an excellent job, and I think that Larry will echo these sentiments. It's been a real pleasure, and I think we have nothing but good things to say about the work that he did for us.
And that is true. That is true. Frankly, we will have a little, and Stacy does not know this, we'll have a little special presentation for him at the next board meeting, so he knows now. Because, you know, obviously, I echo it, absolutely what everybody said here, that Stacy's done a yeoman's job on that and just took something that was actually pretty broken and was able to kind of stir it around and get it fixed and kind of head it in the right direction. And I know the operating departments are absolutely ecstatic about what's happened. There's been a huge change in the attitude, the ability of the staff to do what they were hired to do. It's just been a tremendous change there that's kind of welcomed throughout the city. So,
who says men can't multitask? I mean, I am exactly, impressed that exactly. He served as the temporary HR director and also as the fire chief of Carson City. Good work.
On another note, Mr. Mayor, we do have a change in the agenda. We have a small change in the agenda. We kind of went by that one.
Okay.
Item 10A will be continued to the October 2nd meeting.
10A?
Yes.
I had a call from Rapid. I just left a phone message letting them understand that this was being continued.
They were called. They were contacted by the Sandy Scott with contracts.
Okay, so no, you guys are working it out.
Yes. In fact, based on some pending litigation, we'll probably be going into closed session at the end of this meeting to discuss some of the issues.
All right. Okay, so that'll be off the agenda. We're now going to recess as the Board of Supervisors, and we're going to convene as the Liquor and Entertainment Board. Take the roll, Alan, please.
Member Furlong?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Member Williamson?
Here.
Member Aldean?
Here.
Member Livermore?
Here.
Member Staub?
Present.
Chairman Texera?
Here.
You have a quorum present, Mr. Mayor.
Thank
and you also have minutes.
Right. But what do we have for approval on the minutes?
Yeah, two sets.
Two sets, Mr. Mayor, January 3rd, 08, and July 17th.
Any comments on those, Shelley?
No. Mr. Mayor, I move to approve the minutes from the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board meeting of January 3rd and July 17th as presented.
Second.
A motion. I have a second. Any comments on the question? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries unanimously. Okay. Walter, what have we got?
One item for the Liquor Board this morning. This is action to approve a packaged liquor license for Mr. Pasha, DBA Winnie Discount Liquor Grocery Smoke Shop, located 262 West Winnie Lane, Carson City. All of the reports are in your package, your packet, and the sheriff is here and can present his department's...
Mr. Pasha. Please come forward. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Kevin.
Your name, please, for the record.
Yeah, my name is Madhubhai Basha.
Okay. And you are an applicant to take over the famous Winnie Liquor Store on Winnie Lane. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, I do.
First, I'll ask the sheriff, how's the background check?
It is complete and it's very, very nice. Very good background.
I don't know how this thing got resolved, but I guess you're the new player, correct?
Yes.
You're very aware of what has gone on in the past with this operation, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Very well aware. Okay. Now you work for Harley Davidson, is that correct?
Yes.
You still work for him?
Yeah, I still work.
So you're gonna run two jobs here?
Yeah. Basically, this I just want to run by my family because my wife is at home. I have three kids, and they are one at 11 and 6 and 8, they are 3 years. Now she was working at home, I almost taking care of the kids, almost 8 years. Now she is the time because my little one is also going to school. Now she have plenty of free time.
So you're going to put her to work?
Put our family kind of family business here.
You're aware that all your servers have to go to school with the sheriff. Do you know that your servers, the people that work for you, have to go through training?
Yes.
You understand that?
And yes.
You agreed with it?
Yes, I did.
Now, you know, just by reading the history, that we take these liquor licenses pretty seriously.
Yes,
I'm under the assumption you're aware and you're going to do everything that you can to prevent your people from selling to minors.
All right.
And you agree to that?
Yes, I agree.
Okay. And believe me, we wish you all the success. We've spent a lot of time with this operation for how many months now? More than we'd like to admit to. But anyway, we do have any comments by the board.
Okay, thank you.
Any board comments by the board? Any comments from the audience? Well, Mr. Bosch, let me tell you, first let's see whether you got a license or not. I'll entertain a motion. Go ahead.
I move to approve a package liquor license for Mahuba Basha, excuse me, doing business as Winnie Discount Liquor Grocery and Smoke Shop located at 262 West Winnie Lane, Carson City, including the non-refundable investigation fee of $500. Additionally, all sellers or servers of liquor must attend the Sheriff's Office Servers Education class. It's always hard to say. Within 120 days of the business opening or this approval, and the fiscal impact is not applicable.
Second.
I have a motion. I have a second. Any comments on the question? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Well, we wish you much success, and I'll say this very, very sincerely. I hope this is the last time we ever see you before this board.
Oh, thank you.
And good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sheriff. We will now adjourn as the Liquor and Entertainment Board, and we shall reconvene as the Board of Supervisors. Do we have any items on the consent agenda that anybody in the audience would like to have heard separately? Are there any items on the consent agenda any board member would like to have heard separately? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move for approval of the consent agenda to consist of three items. Item 5-1, Parks and Recreation Open Space. Item 5-2, Public Works Resolution Number 2008-R42. And finally, item number 5-3, Alternative Sentencing Resolution Number 2008-43 as presented.
I have a motion. I have a second. Any comments on the question? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. The next item, I believe, is Supervisor Williamson.
Yes, and I'd ask Mr. Fontaine to come up. As you know, every legislative session, the Nevada Association of Counties presents this time five bills for consideration by the legislature, and I've asked Jeff Fontaine to review those for our endorsement.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Supervisors. For the record, I'm Jeff Fontaine, I'm Executive Director.
How many bills did NACO get? We used to have 10. How many were they giving you now?
Mr. Mayor, we used to have 20.
20.
We have 5 now.
Uh-huh.
And that was a result of Senate Bill 490, which reduced bill draft requests for basically everybody.
You think it has anything to do that they don't want you at their meetings, or how the hell this going to work, huh?
Well, as I said, the Senate Bill 490 actually reduced BDRs for everybody, including...
Except them.
Except legislators.
That's what I'm saying.
Executive branch as well.
Okay. What do we got on the table? You know, what we'd like to do, if it's all right with Supervisor Williams, and she brought the package to us, as you discuss a bill, let's take a motion and vote on it so you know you've got where it's at. Is that all right with you?
That's perfect.
Okay, let's go. What do you got up first?
You. Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to present our legislative package. And let me just preface all this by telling you what I think is obvious, and that is this upcoming legislative session is going to be extremely difficult given the economic downturn and, in particular, the state's revenue shortfall. The cuts that are being contemplated for the biennium, at least by the governor's office, are 14% across the board. We saw what happened in the last special session with regard to cuts for the current fiscal year, and those were, I wouldn't say easy to make, but compared to what is going to have to be cut for the next biennium, relatively easy because a lot of one-shot expenditures were either eliminated or reduced. We're talking, or at least the governor's office has directed his agency heads to reduce spending by as much as 14% for the next biennium. So we know it's going to be a very difficult session. And so our top priority at NACO is to play aggressive defense, to protect county revenues, and certainly to continue to oppose unfunded mandates. And we need your help in conveying the message that it's not okay to balance the state's budget shortfall on the backs of county governments, and that county revenues are needed to provide those essential services that you provide to your constituents every day. And many of those, or most of those services, of course, are mandated by the state legislature. So we have five BDRs, down from 20, and we started out discussing a lot of the issues during the course of the year. We finally had a legislative subcommittee of NACO members meet. We sent out surveys, and the board finally took action on the five BDRs on August 22nd. They were submitted to LCB on August 29th ahead of the September 1st deadline. I'll go through the five BDRs, and then I guess we'll go through each one as you suggested, Mr.
Yeah, we'll discuss each one and then vote at the board so you know where Carson City is.
Okay. The first BDR, and is really, I think, a primary initiative that we are interested in, has to do with giving county governments more autonomy. And as you know, Nevada is a Dillon's Rule state, which means that county governments are only allowed and city governments are only allowed to carry out those duties that are expressly granted to them by the state legislature. That is a restriction, limits your flexibility to carry out your day-to-day activities, especially when you have a legislature that meets once every 2 years. So if you have a need that comes up, you've got to wait to get permission from the legislature to carry out a particular duty. We spent a lot of time on this particular issue and came up with three specific functional areas of county autonomy that we have submitted into our first BDR. And the idea here is that we didn't want to go back to the legislature again and ask the legislature to grant county governments home rule or to reverse Dillon's rule. The message we've been getting from legislators is give us bite-sized pieces of home rule or local authority. You know, maybe we can grant those to you and then we'll see how things work out. So the first BDR has to do with allowing county governments to impose civil penalties for business licensing types of violations. And I'll give you an example of why that's important in Clark County. Last year with the problems with the endoscopy centers, Clark County could not impose criminal penalties or civil penalties against the operators of those endoscopy centers, whereas the city of Las Vegas could. So all we're asking for in that particular BDR is the same authority as city governments currently have. The other issue has to do with allowing county governments to abate graffiti on private residences and actually recoup those costs. That's a big issue in the urban areas because of a lot of the foreclosures and so forth and so on. The third area has to do with allowing county governments to sell naming rights to various facilities. Clark County did it last session for one of their shooting ranges. We think it's time now that county governments be given the authority to do that as they see fit. So those are the three specific areas. There are other areas of county authorities that surfaced as a result of this survey that we're going to be seeking legislators to help us with and submit as their own BDRs.
But this is BDR, the first one, right?
This will be the first BDR, those three specific areas.
Anybody in the audience like to speak to this issue? Any board member? Entertain a motion.
I move to approve the first BDR suggested by NACO concerning three specific areas of Dillon's Rule.
You got a BDR number? I mean, that's okay.
I don't know if we do yet.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Number
okay. The second BDR has to do with the indigent defense system in the state of Nevada. As it currently stands, county governments are responsible for almost all the costs for providing indigent defense in the state. If you are under the state public defender's office, you pay 80% of their costs and have no control over how they provide their service. If you opt out of the state public defender's office, you pay the full cost. Why this is important is because the Supreme Court in Nevada on January 4th issued an order that would change the way indigent defense is provided in this state. And in a nutshell, it would place additional requirements, including the possibility of caseload standards, performance standards, and things of that nature. In addition to that, you've got a growing population of indigent defendants, and a U.S. Supreme Court now has ruled that you have to provide counsel for indigent defendants earlier in their processing. All of this means additional costs for county governments. What we found in researching all of this, and what the Supreme Court, I believe, has acknowledged, or if they haven't, I think will, and that is the fact that indigent defense is a state responsibility.
It is.
The only reason that county governments are paying for it is because the legislature
told us to.
So this particular BDR proposes three things. One, it allows Clark County and Washoe County to opt into the state public defender's office, which they currently are not authorized to do. It would also require the state public defender's office to have an office in each county where they provide services. And number three, the most important piece, is to require the state to actually pay, fully pay, for indigent defense in the state of Nevada.
I like that one.
Jeff, chances? Slim and none?
Slim and none, but it's a point.
Good shot. Look at your attention.
It's a point that needs to be made.
Any comments from the audience?
I can have a comment.
All right. Any comment, Richard?
Jeff, having a public defender's office, state public defender's office, in every county, isn't that kind of an onerous thing? Wouldn't you want to look at it from a court district, from a district court? I mean, that's more of a regional type of a setup. I mean, you go out to Battle Mountain or, say, Eureka, I mean, you're talking a huge cost to put an attorney into a town that probably has 1,000 people in it. I mean, wouldn't you want to look at the actual judicial districts as the criteria for having a public defender's office within them?
Well, Supervisor Staub, I think that's an excellent point. What we're reacting to is the fact that county by county has opted out of the state public defender's office because they have felt that they have just not gotten service that they're paying for. So, you know, I think from the perspective of each county having the ability to have a state public defender in their county, that may help. But your point is well made, and maybe that's something that we can talk to our members about.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Jeff had a quick conversation with our district attorney, and apparently we do use the public defender's office. It's a paid service. We have to pay for the public defender. I guess my question is, are these public defenders by and large competent? I mean, how many times do we have because it's an additional cost if the person being represented challenges the competency of their attorney and asks for a mistrial because they haven't been adequately represented. So I think that's important to note. So.
Okay, any other comments? Entertain a motion. Go ahead, Robin.
I move to approve the bill draft request concerning indigent defense.
I have a motion and a second. Any comments on the question? All in favor signify by saying aye. It'll die in committee, but go ahead.
All right, Mr. Mayor, the third BDR has to do with changes to the open meeting law, and the specific change has to do with the way your board, boards of county commissioners and city councils, conduct performance evaluations of your county manager and fire chief, so the top direct report at-will employees. And we have heard from a number of county commissioners that they don't feel that that's the best environment in which to conduct those performance evaluations. They felt that going back to the way that it used to be prior to 2005, to allow the person who's being evaluated to ask for that evaluation be done in a private session. However, a report would have to be made in a public forum,
of course,
of the results of that private session. And again, this is not to try to circumvent open meeting law requirements or keep the public out of the loop. I think it's just a better way to do these evaluations.
Jeff, did all your member counties support this?
The board supported it. I understand that Clark County is okay with the way it currently is, so they're probably not going to support the bill. But again, it's the board that voted on this bill.
Shelley?
Just one comment. You know, I serve on the TRPA governing board, and of course, the TRPA is required to adopt rules, the most stringent rules, and so they have to compare the open meeting law, the Brown Act in California versus the open meeting law in Nevada, and they determine that overall the open meeting law in Nevada is more stringent, and so they're required to abide by its requirements. And I'll tell you, you know, we generally applaud ourselves as Nevadans because we are so much more independently minded than Californians, and we have, you know, less bureaucracy and less interference with individual freedoms. And yet the California members of the TRPA governing board, when they found out that John Singlob's evaluation had to be done in public, were absolutely aghast.
Yeah.
You know, because people, quite frankly, will not be as candid if these evaluations are held in public. So I think if we can get this approved, it would be a vast improvement.
Okay. Any other comments on this issue? Entertain a motion.
I move to endorse the NACO BDR dealing with evaluating appointed public officials in private as opposed to.
Second.
So motion is second. Take the roll, Alan.
Supervisor Williamson?
Yes.
Supervisor Aldean?
Yes.
Mayor Texera?
No.
Supervisor Livermore?
Yes.
Supervisor Staub?
No.
Motion passes 3-2.
Got support from Carson.
Thank you.
The tax statement.
That'll be the last. I'll save that for last.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, number four has to do with tax abatements or partial tax abatements that are granted by the Commission on Economic Development. The board felt that the way it currently stands, the only requirement for their involvement is to be notified by the Commission on Economic Development that an application for a partial tax abatement is pending. But they have no say over whether or not that abatement is actually granted. And the NACO board felt that they should have a say in whether or not those tax abatements are granted. And so that's the BDR. It would basically require that the counties
be notified or have a say.
They would have to be notified, and they would have an opportunity to say yay or nay to that tax abatement.
Could it be overruled by the state?
That's not what we're suggesting here. What we want is full say by the county.
Full say.
And then if there is no response within 60 days, that's an implied.
On mine. Good try. Any comments from the audience? Entertain a motion.
I move to endorse the NACO BDR dealing with the Commission on Economic Development requiring that county have of approval of tax abatements.
Second.
I have a motion. I have a second. Any comments on the question? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. You got it. So far, you're batting 100%.
Four for four.
Yeah. Okay. You're batting 1,000, pal.
The last BDR has
this could be good luck.
The last BDR has to do with the ad valorem tax. And basically what this BDR proposes to do is to give county boards of commissioners the authority to increase up to 10 cents per $100 of assessed value, the ad valorem tax, to pay for vital public health, public safety and welfare services. And this would give county governments the flexibility to raise revenues to do what you need to do. And it's modeled after a couple of bills that were submitted in 2007. One was Senate Bill 550, which was actually a bill for Carson City to increase the ad valorem tax.
I got a hearing.
You got a hearing.
And it died.
Let me give you a couple of specifics about this bill. Number one, it would be outside the 3% and 8% cap the first year only. After the first year, it would be subject to those caps.
How does that work? You've got, it wouldn't have pertained to us, but let's say you've got Elko County or City of Elko, whatever, and they're at their cap of 364, say. They pass this, and this is up to 10 cents, right?
Yes.
Okay, they they go ahead and this passes. Now, assuming it passes the legislature, which isn't going to happen, but let's suppose it does, then they enact, let's say, 5 cents of the 10. That puts them over the cap at 269. They got 1 year to bring their cap down to 264. Does it go away, or how's it work? 364.
It would be above the cap.
Yeah.
But below the 3%, 8% cap after the first year. So it would be subject to the 3% and 8% abatement after the first year.
And of course,
and outside the 364 cap.
Right. And this is something that can be imposed without a vote, correct?
This would require a two-thirds vote.
Of the board.
It would require a review after 10 years. It would require a separate line item on the tax bill. It would have to be used for specific purposes that would be identified on the tax bill, and would not be applied in any way that would reduce the revenues to any other taxing district in the entity.
Okay. Comments from the audience. Why did I know you'd be coming up here, Bruce? I knew you were here for a specific reason, Bruce. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, supervisors. I would ask that you not endorse this one. It's an override. One override will beget another override. There'll be no end to it. The voters should approve it, just like the voters are being asked to approve the override now. That is the correct way to do it. Why do we have no confidence in this kind of setup? Because it's like, why are we in the V&T mess? Because you were authorized by the legislature to increase tax, sales tax, 0.25% for infrastructure. You got it changed. Half of that 1/8% went to the V&T. Now you're asking for another. It was intended for infrastructure. This one, it'll start at 10 cents, and then next year it'll be 20 cents. There will be no end to it. The voters need to approve it. What good is a cap if you're going to start finding all kinds of ways to override it? And I guarantee you we will have a very nice contingency, well prepared and well represented at the Legislative Council when this one, BDR 460, comes up.
Thank you, Mr.
Kitts. We're tracking it now.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. John?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and supervisors. Again, for the record, John Wagner. And I basically echo what was said by Mr. Kitts. The way I see it is you open up the floodgates. And once the cap is removed, might as well remove the entire cap, not just the cap for those specific purposes, because you can manipulate under the cap. You can always raise salaries under the cap and then go up for the other. And so to me, it's opening the floodgates, and I think the people should have a right to vote. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments?
Good morning. I'm Ronnie Hanneman, Executive Director of the Carson City Chamber of Commerce.
Good morning, Ms. Hanneman.
Good morning. And I've been directed by our Board of Directors also to oppose this particular bill because of the fact that you continue to target one segment of the population, and that is the population that owns property, be it business or private. The other is that, and I echo your thoughts, and that is that the voters should continue to have the right to decide how much taxes they're going to continue to pay for whatever reason. Thank you.
Thank you. And could you
I put the wide body move on and get around. That's right. Ken Haskins, and I also am opposing this for the same reasons, pretty much, that the people should have a right to vote on something like this, raising taxes. And I think that, again, as Ronnie mentioned, the property owners are the ones that are always targeted. So I stand in opposition to.
Thank you, Mr. Haskins.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Dennis Johnson. I'm going to speak against the tax as well for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think the people should be made or given the opportunity to decide how they want to be taxed. If the taxes keep on adding up, the property owners will pay The downside of that is when you have apartment buildings, mobile home parks, things like that, if you have older folks that are on limited or fixed incomes, when these costs are passed along, how many of those folks are going to have to make a choice of where they live to a lesser area, maybe the family station wagon or something like that? There has to be a line drawn that no more taxes when the people don't want it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any other comments from the audience? We got a lot of emails. With that, I'll entertain a motion.
May I?
Go ahead.
Jeff and I had a conversation yesterday. Or was it the day before? Can't remember. But based on, I know that we've all been receiving phone calls and emails regarding this particular issue, and to a lot of people, they perceive this, I know this wasn't NACO's intention, but as an end run, because Carson City, unlike other municipalities, has a question on the ballot addressing public safety issues. So, and I can understand the way why it's perceived that way. And in our conversation, we talked about, because I was kind of alarmed that we didn't have kind of a generic bill opposing unfunded mandates. I know that we will on individual, whenever an unfunded mandate is proposed, NACO will be there to adamantly oppose it. But you know, this is just symptomatic of a larger problem, and that is the state's tendency to pass, you know, the burden of these programs on to local government, programs that they create and should have to find associated funding for. And I think at some point, all of the counties in Nevada are going to have to draw that proverbial line in the sand and say enough is enough and refuse to implement programs that are implemented by the state without any associated funding source. And so while I understand that this is very important to the rurals, Jeff, and I don't know whether or not we've been able to come up with some solution that would enable rural counties, perhaps, because I know they're in dire straits financially, to implement this without including Washoe, Clark, and Carson. I understand, based on our conversation, it's unlikely that Clark or Washoe will support this. You know, I don't want to necessarily deny the rurals the opportunity because they have limited sources of funding to have this option, but I, for one, am not supportive of what's being proposed.
You know, the issue that you bring up, Shelley, we did way back when I was first or second term, we put an advisory question out there. And people said and voted, I think it was a question 8 or something like that, and through NACO. And it definitively, the people said there should be no unfunded mandates. And so what happens is, yeah, we take that. That's advisory. It has no binding. It has no binding rights to the legislature, but, you know, they were nice enough to give us fiscal notes, right? Jeff, those fiscal notes started coming up as to whether they were an unfunded mandate, and they kept working it around it. And what they're going to do, and until something happens, and we just don't have the clout, because when you get into a discussion with the legislature, you want home rule, I'll give you home rule, and I'll give you no funding. Am I right or wrong, Jeff?
Well, Mr. Mayor, that's true. There was an advisory question that NACO put
passed.
Forth. Passed. By quite a bit, 62% to 38%, and it was not put on the ballot to change the Constitution. Of course, there are a couple of statutes that one, in effect, prohibit unfunded mandates. There's another statute that talks about putting the fiscal note on bill drafts, but the legislature has continued to exempt themselves or exempt certain bills from those requirements, and
they
so
do
you
it.
Have what you have.
You know, this is what you've got to do is you've got to get your people lined up and just don't let them continue to do it. And the thing is, the wars sometimes the legislature are not with Carson City. They're not with Elko County. They are the wars with Clark County, and we get caught up in that jet stream and get sucked along. You know this isn't going to pass, because there's not. I don't know if anybody's going to support it, if I can even get a motion, but the key is that if by some miracle it was to pass, of course the governor would veto it. But I thank you for your hard work, and you've got a hell of a difficult session coming up, pal. And let's go ahead and finish this out. I'll entertain a motion on this bill.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to say, and maybe, Jeff, just briefly you could say, that this was not something that was initiated by Carson City.
Oh,
it was not initiated by Clark. It was not. It is from, as we've, the rurals
right.
that are struggling to meet their budgets and anticipate they're going to have even more demands on
right.
their budgets. But with that being said, this is not an end run. This is not an effort to circumvent the rule of voters. This is a cry of help from our neighbors, and that's why it was even considered as a BDR.
Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Sure.
As you know, there are a number of counties out there, and Carson City being one of them, that are under the 364 cap by quite a bit.
We are the lowest.
Yeah.
Well, what happened when the legislature passed AB 49 is, in effect, they took away your ability to raise revenue by raising the ad valorem tax rate to meet your needs. And so you can raise your ad valorem tax rate today, but you're not going to raise any additional revenue. So I think, you know, what this is all about is for those counties who feel like they need to raise an additional $50,000 so they don't have to cut off, you know, funding for their sheriff's department or from, you know, some essential service, this gives them that option to do that.
Yeah, but the critical issue is the vote of the people.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Wait a minute. Larry.
I was just going to weigh in a little bit, too, that we had met as county managers, city managers some time ago to discuss, and one of the concerns we have is what's happening with the healthcare system and what may occur from the state level down to the local level. now, there's a lot of the state's general fund money that goes to support the health programs that are state mandated, or by federal mandated, I guess, and there's a question as to whether or not those can pass to us as the county's picking up the local share of that. And it was kind of the thought at the time that possibly we may need some way to, if those mandates started coming down, as if you want to continue to have health programs of a certain type, you have to fund those, then how do we do that? And this was kind of a thought about, okay, maybe we need to have the ability someplace to be able to raise those extra revenues in that kind of situation. There's a lot of areas that we're really concerned about.
You know, the issue that I brought to the legislature in the last session was pretty straightforward. It was on indigent acute care, and I talked with Jeff on this. We have they capped us at $2.64. That's where we got capped at, the lowest in the state of Nevada. Now, all I asked for was allow us to go up 5 cents without a vote of the people through a unanimous vote of the Board of Supervisors, because what's happened is that this community has all the beds. We get them from Douglas, we get them from Lyon, we get them from Story. They come here. And when they go indigent, understand there is 10 cents every person in this community is getting taxed. Well, guess what? And we're one of the few that tax the maximum. So we tax our people the most. We take the influx from other counties. And then what happens is the taxes that we enact don't come up to what our costs are. So we take general fund money to subsidize it, to take care of people outside. All I wanted to say is, God, can we at least keep up? We're the lowest. And if we want to raise 2 cents, we will put it on the bill. 100% of the Board of Supervisors for acute elderly care. You know what happened? Died in committee, and that's where this bill's gone. So we can talk all we want, but that's the reality of what's happening over there. Okay,
just Jeff, you sent me this on Proposition 1A in California. You know, the last was an advisory question, but perhaps some of the folks in the audience, people who attend these meetings on a regular basis, who are fiscal conservatives, could assist in, you know, perhaps circulating an initiative petition, as was done, I presume, in California. It passed by 83-16, and basically it prohibits unfunded mandates. And I never think of California as being progressive, but in this instance, they were extremely progressive, and I think the same thing needs to happen in the state of Nevada.
Well, Supervisor Aldean, in addition to prohibiting unfunded mandates, it says that local revenues need to stay with the local governments unless there are, you know, extraordinary circumstances.
Come on, a new project.
the way the courts are ruling on petitions, I don't think we can get anything passed.
Okay, we're kicking it around. I'll entertain a motion, and you know.
As a representative of the Nevada Association of Counties, I will move that we endorse the recommendation to allow a Board of County Commissioners to levy an ad valorem tax at the rate of 10 cents outside the cap for public safety, health, and welfare services.
I have a motion.
I'll second it so we can have a vote.
Second. I got a motion. Second. Take the roll.
Supervisor Williamson?
No.
Supervisor Aldean?
No.
Supervisor Livermore?
No.
Supervisor Staub?
No.
Mayor Teixeira?
No. Well, Jeff, you knew that was going to happen. And, you know, but that's your job. You got to do, you got a lot of people to take care of, not just Washoe Clark, Carson City. It's the little guys out there. Some of them with mining proceeds are sitting terrific. There are some dying. Thank you very much,
Thank you.
Jeff.
Appreciate your time.
With that, we're going to recess.
Can I just say one thing? One of the things, Carson City is honored to host the 2008 annual conference of the Nevada Association of Counties from November 12th through 14th. So you'll see a lot of new faces in the downtown, frequenting our businesses and our motels and hotels. It's going to be based at the LCB building, and it's very exciting, and hopefully everybody in Carson City will join in and participate. You have an opportunity to see leaders from all over the state.
And once again, give the dates. When do we kick off?
November 12th.
14th. November 12th through the 14th. And you get to look at all the newly elected officials. Okay, with that, we're going to recess for 10 minutes.
Thank you.
I knew where that was going. Oh. All right. Yeah, that was like, what's your voice to speak?
Huh? Your voice to speak. Take your time.
We're here. How much can we pay you an hour?
Look at all the FaceTime you get on television.
Are you getting this, Dave?
Yeah. Okay, the Board of Supervisors will now reconvene, and you notice now that we're going to have a presentation from our new outstanding aggressive district attorney, and I notice the audience all left, but go ahead anyway.
I noticed that too. I was a little taken back by that. Well, good morning, Board, Mayor, Board of Supervisors, Neil Rombardo, Carson City DA. First, for my friend John Wagner, I can attest that no one takes Marv or drags Marv anywhere. I was in D.C. with him, and his legs were barely working at that time, and he dragged me everywhere, so it was very interesting.
Thank you for the kind words.
You bet. Anyway, the first time I thought I'd get invited by a legislative body to give a address to them about what an executive office was doing, I thought there'd be more applause and a bunch more folks around. But anyway, that's all right. That's all right.
So, we'll give you a standing ovation.
Basically, the DA's office and the role of the DA, in my mind, is divided up into three significant functions at the office. We have the two primary functions of the DA's office, which is our civil division and our criminal division, and then the third function that we perform is the administrative functions. And so what I'd like to do is just run through those, and I know that Marv likes to run a quick meeting, so I skipped my one-hour PowerPoint and my 45-minute discussion afterwards for 10 minutes because I have a meeting in 10 minutes. So let's get started. The first thing that we did, the first major accomplishment for the administrative side is, as you all know, we took the child support division, which was a part of the DA's office, and we sent that back to the state, and the net result to the Carson City budget was about $200,000. And I'm happy to report that we check quarterly with the state, and that program seems to be running better than ever. And
can I just interrupt you?
Sure.
At this point? I'd like to mention when Neil came to me with this plan, this was not a popular thing to do by his peers. Am I right or wrong?
That's right.
He stepped, quote, out of the box and took a little heat for what he did because we set a little bit of a precedent. And I just want to compliment you because that's the way it should have been for a long time. And the state was welcoming it back.
They were. And I appreciate that. And it's very true. In fact, the DA's Association actually passed a resolution after I did this that no other DA's office was going to voluntarily do it. But if you really look at it, and the issue that you just recently discussed with NACO was taxes and how do we save money and unfunded mandates. And it was clearly an unfunded mandate. And the interesting thing to me was an unfunded mandate from the federal government to the state government and then to our county. And as I expressed to all of you at that time, only about one-third of the children that were being served through our child support division were actually children in need in Carson City. So 67% were actually outside the jurisdiction or simply filing for child support for other reasons, such as to get welfare and things of that nature. So clearly, it's definitely being done better by the state, and I'm very proud of that decision and I saved the county budget $200,000. We've, through our decision making, saved $200,000 in 7 full-time positions.
And I'll just step in here, too, to let the board know that Washoe County followed suit after Neil did that, and they have since turned over part of their child support services to the state as well.
That's true. Several smaller counties have now, although they said they weren't going to, have started to do this. So thank you for the kind words, and I am proud of the way that's worked out. The next thing that we've done, just some simple administrative stuff to save some funds as well, is we've changed our subpoena process completely in the DA's office. We now electronically subpoena every single law enforcement officer, something that probably could have been done earlier, but that's okay. So we started it. The nice thing about the electronic subpoena is we save time and money. There's no paper going around, and we save time in that we don't literally have a process server coming in, grabbing documents, then taking them over to the sheriff's office and throwing them in a loose leaf binder to keep track of the subpoenas. What we've noticed is not only have we saved the money, but people are actually making it to court a lot better than they ever did before because they're not losing those documents. And so that's been very effective. The other thing that we've started is we've started a call-off phone number. If you've been subpoenaed for a case, the day before your case, and this goes for all the members of the public as well, you can call in our electronic call-off number, and it'll tell you whether or not you need to show up the next day for your subpoena. But this saves the county money because the law enforcement officers are required to call in, and we don't have to pay overtime if their case is called off. And so they don't just show up and collect overtime. And so we're working on that. That program's been up and running for about a month, and we're very happy with the success. You can always do better, as you all know, and so we're going to keep that going. So I'm very thrilled, very excited about both of those. And then the final thing that we've done with regard to the subpoena processes is we used to use a three, and I know this stuff sounds odd and kind of minutia, but I just want to let you know some of the ways we're thinking outside the box to save money, is we used to use a three-page NCR paper for subpoenas. And so we looked at it and we said, well, what do we need these three pages for, and why are we going to outside printers when we have these great printers in the office? So now everything's done in-house, and we don't need the NCR paper, which is a significant savings. That's thousands of dollars a year because, as you would imagine, we're one of the busiest DA's office in the state. We produce thousands of subpoenas. So just little things that we've done in the administrative end to save time and money for Carson City. And so moving off of that, what I'd like to now discuss is the civil division. And the civil division, as you know, is headed up by Melanie. And Melanie is a fantastic lawyer, and she won the James Bartley Award last year, which is recognition for the best civil lawyer in the state for public bodies. And so,
did he give you a bonus for that?
No bonus.
If I could interrupt just again. I've had the pleasure in my almost 4 years of having worked with Melanie, and we've had some meetings with various people and businesses and what have you, and she's very professional, she's very bright, and I've nicknamed her what, Melanie?
On a good day? I think... Junkyard dog.
That's right. That's
good.
I can testify to that, actually. Apparently, my lunch date with Melanie is Wednesday. I did not realize this. So on Tuesday, I made lunch plans with someone else, and the junkyard dog came in and yelled at me, so I canceled those plans. So I didn't know this. And the hard part about that was I went home, my wife pointed out she didn't have a lunch date, so now I'm really... Anyway, so let's talk about the civil division. We're very lucky to have Melanie, and one of the things I know you all remember that I met with you before taking this position and asked you what you wanted to see out of your civil division, and the number one thing you all said was, don't tell us what we can't do, tell us how we can do what we want to do. And so what we've tried to do is, although we can't always give you the answer you want, and I know that, I know I haven't always given you the answer you want, Mr. Mayor, but we've always tried to at least give you a way to get to where you want to be, and we're going to continue to do that. And we're going to continue to work hard at that, and when possible, I don't know if we can improve upon it, but we will do our best. So I know I haven't always given you the answer you want, but I at least have given you an answer, and I think that's the best we can do. So that's the attitude we've tried to bring to the civil division, and I think it's been rather successful. And so let's talk about maybe the more meat and potatoes of the office, which is the criminal division and specifically the GRIPS program that we've started. As you know, several months ago, we rolled out the GRIPS program here in Carson City, which is the gang response, intervention, prevention, and suppression group, which is being run through the partnership. I'm happy to report to the board as well as to the public that that program is off and running. It is doing quite well. The suppression program is being run by the chamber. They have a diverse group of folks working on many different issues. One of the neat issues that I'm really excited about is the mobile recreation program. They're going to go into neighborhoods where there might not be as many parks, where there's folks who need this type of recreation, there's children who need this type of recreation. And I know I'm not going to get on my soapbox because you guys have all heard it a million times, but if we don't reach out and give these kids a hand up at this young age, they're going to be our criminals in the future. And so we're doing that through the suppression group, and I'm really excited about the mobile recreation program. They're going to go into these impoverished areas where children are living alone or with an older sibling, and they're going to give them a recreation opportunity. And the nice thing about this recreation opportunity, and this is all being done by the chamber, they head up the suppression side. The nice thing about it is it builds trust in the community. And if they have that trust, hopefully they won't become our gangbangers in the future.
Also,
yes,
again,
sir.
The funding for this came through the partnership, am I correct?
That's correct.
See, and that's what we're about, is to facilitate programs. And through that steering committee, and I just want to tell you, my friend, you know, your action on that partnership, along with the sheriff, and along with the alternative sentencing and the chamber, and everybody is working quite well. And we did fund, what, 25 grand or so?
I believe it's 25,000.
Yeah. And we'd like to expand on it. And since you brought up the point about being in D.C., Neil and I, and he presented to the various congressional delegations and leaders, I mean the people themselves, and you extremely professional, and that's why that earmark was given universally by all three of them. I just wanted to pass you another accolade, but it's well earned. Richard.
How are we doing with your victim's assistance coordinator?
I was just going to get to that.
Okay.
Let me finish with the GRIPS if I can, and then
okay.
I'll finish with the victim.
Pete had another question.
Well, my point was to what Mr. Roboto just talked about, mobile recreation, and I can't tell you how much the partnership, of course, the city partnership, and it might be worthwhile, Mr. Mayor, before you leave, that your term of office, that maybe the partnership needs to do exactly what Neil's doing today.
I'll present here.
You're giving an update to the community, so all know.
I'd like to do that after the election, so whoever the board is, that they get. Well, no, we could do it. No, but I mean, after the election, you know who's coming. And I think if we did something, say, in the second meeting in November, or the first meeting in December, because that partnership is an ad hoc committee of the mayor, and basically there's no votes taken. They just tell me what the hell to do, and which is good. And we need to make a presentation to let this board know what we've done and what we're doing and what our plans are. We've got it very well defined. And
Mr. Mayor, I can only imagine the hours that you personally invested.
Well, the beautiful part about this is a community organization. It just isn't government. It's a chamber. It's the media. It's the stakeholders, and that's what makes it work.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
no,
Neil.
And
Neil is an integral part of that.
I enjoy being a part of the partnership, and I wouldn't miss it for the world. I think it's a fantastic group, and they're great people. So, no problem. Let me jump ahead because I'm now late for that meeting. Intervention group. The intervention group's being headed up by the school district. There's several folks involved in that. I shouldn't say the school district. We have a principal from the school district who's heading it up, as well as a couple other principals interested. They are off and running with several different ideas. Briefly, one of their ideas is basically a gang review board. They want to bring children who are on the verge of becoming that gang member. They bring them in with their parents and say, look, here's what your child's doing in school. He's becoming a gang member, and what they will do is recommend programs and ways for this person to get out of that gang lifestyle that he's on his way of joining. And so I'm very excited about that program. Our office will participate in those review boards as well. through our juvenile prosecutor. So that's a very, very nice program, and I'm very excited about that. On the suppression side, as you know, in the last 8 months, we've put seven of the top different gang leaders into prison or into jail right here in Carson City. I'm thrilled with that. We are also working on the nuisance side of things. We've sent out several forfeiture notices as well. In fact, Melanie told me that we sent out a forfeiture notice on a property owner who was allowing a drug user, in this case not a gang member, to live there, saying, look, you need to evict or we're going to consider taking your property. She called and thanked her for the letter and said, this is the best program. And she was very complimentary. She doesn't live in Carson. She didn't know what was going on at her property. And so she was very excited to find out, well, she wasn't excited to find out about this, but she was excited that we were taking action and helping her remove that person. It's really important to note for the property owners that our notice gives them shortened time frames to evict these folks out of their property. So it's a really good program that we're doing. So that's part of our suppression effort, Mr. Mayor.
Well, I just need to interrupt you one more time. We, as you know, this board was, we went through a little bit of controversy as to, remember, red tagging motels and so forth, or businesses, apartments, remember, and social hosts, and we let that go. Neil came to me and he says, Marvy says, I've got the power to do this, so let's just forget about it and let's go. I'll do it. And how many, you must have spent at least 25 that at least you and I know about.
Right. We're well over 25 now. We've received, you know what, I should have counted. We're in the 30s, and I know we've received about 80%. We get calls from the property owner saying, they're out. Thank you very much. I mean, the program's really working.
And so that, I just can't, again, once again, thank you. You know, you not only do you talk the talk, I mean, Neil, you do walk the walk.
Thanks.
And you should be complimented on that. And then I can say, this is the first time, and I've been around there a long time. Boy, I mean, those gang members are going to prison now.
They are.
And that's due to your aggressive prosecution.
I'm very proud of that. Thank you. Two other things on the suppression committee. Every month, 14 different law enforcement agencies get together in your DA's office, the public DA's office, and they meet to share intel so that we all understand what's going on. And that's Lyon County, Douglas County, Carson City, Washoe, Reno, the Department of Corrections, NDI, DPS, all these folks come to your DA's office and they have a meeting once a month to discuss these gang issues. And the intel that comes out of there is amazing. And in fact, they were so excited about what they were learning that in October 20th and 21st, we will be putting on the first Carson City Gang Symposium right here at the Plaza. The partnership helped put this program on. We have a confirmed attendance of 100 folks already. We are expecting 150 to 200 law enforcement officials, school district officials, not only school district officials, school police, will all be right here in Carson City. So I'm hoping that the businesses will first open up their arms and welcome all these folks. Clark County actually is even coming up for the symposium. But not only that, we learned some new things that we can do to combat this situation. So I will end with the victim witness coordinator. I know I indicated that we saved $200,000 to the budget. I appreciate the board allowing me to spend some of that on the victim witness coordinator. And I'd like to tell you about that program. We have hired a new victim witness coordinator. Her name is Frankie Haynes. She is amazing. She actually comes from the Domestic Violence Advocates program. She is now working for us. She works with these victims, and she gets these victims through the system so that we can increase our prosecution rates and make Carson City a safer place. Recently, she's helped a child get through the system. You know, any crime against a child is, in my mind, probably the worst crime there is, next to murder. And she has 100, I don't know if it's 100, I might be overstating that, 50 teddy bears waiting for these children when they come there. It gives them something to hold on to. It gives them something to take to the stand. There's nothing more lonely than sitting on that witness stand and having a bunch of men like me question you. And these children sit there and they clutch this bear, and that's their friend for that 10, 15, 20, 30, 1 hour hearing. And so we have that going on. She has worry stones for older, you know, for folks who don't want to hold a teddy bear, obviously. But they're up there. It gives them something to think about, take their mind off of what they're doing. She is amazing, and I'm very, very excited about what that program has brought to the DA's office. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's very good. So one last thing. Although a lot of folks said it couldn't be done, we've completely implemented vertical prosecution. So every prosecutor takes a case from beginning to end. I have nothing else to add. I appreciate your time. Are there any questions? Because I really have to roll.
All right, thank you, Neil. You. Yes.
Before Neil leaves the room, I've just got a email that we've gotten Omar Segura back in custody. So you've got maybe we can put him away for a little longer.
You're doing an outstanding job, Neil. Okay, moving on. We're now with item development standards 8A.
Bill number, Mr. Mayor, is 133.
Okay.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, Lee Plummel with the Carson City Planning Division. And this first item here is action to introduce on first reading an ordinance to change the zoning of two parcels located at 501 and 505 West King Street from residential office to public regional. This property is specifically the performance hall of the Brewery Arts Center. It's across Minnesota Street. It's the historic church that was purchased in
right.
2001 by the Brewery Arts Center. And this rezoning to this public regional designation, brings it into conformance with the public uses that are being conducted right now. I'll note at the last Planning Commission meeting, they also got a special use permit for all their uses expanding onto that property.
Robin?
No. Just
okay. Yeah. Any comments from the audience?
Yeah, I just have one correction for poor Lee. On page one, under section two, third line, beginning amendment, we just need to strike the wood will provide. Okay. It's probably a stock document that you just used for all of these. Okay, thanks, Lee.
With that, go ahead, Robin.
Thank you. I move to introduce on first reading bill number 133. An ordinance to change the zoning on two parcels located at 501 West King Street and 505 West King Street, APN 003-206-01 and 003-206-02, from residential office to regional public PR based on the findings contained in the staff report.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any comments on the question? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. B.
Thank you. This item is action to approve a final subdivision map application known as Jet Ranch, to allow the subdivision map resulting in 11 airspace lots and one common lot area on property zoned public regional at the Carson City Airport. These are airspace lots being subdivided for hangar space. The process is that a tentative map is approved by the Planning Commission and Board of Supervisors, and they come in and meet the conditions of approval, which are attached, and then city ordinance requires the board to approve the final map, after which time the map can be recorded. I'll note on this one, this is one, the project has received special use permit for the hangars and all the necessary approvals prior to this. I'll note Jeff Sharp is here from the engineering division. If you have any specific questions on the map, and the applicant on this is also here today.
Any comments from anybody in the audience? Any comments by the board? Entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I just want to note that this is just another example of our continuing efforts at the airport to make it an economic viable entity with the addition of 11 airspace slots. I move to approve a final subdivision map application known as Jet Ranch from KCXP Investments LLC to allow a subdivision map resulting in 11 airspace lots and one common area lot on property zone public recreational PR. Located at 2600 College Parkway, APN 005-031-04, based on the fulfillment of 13 conditions of approval.
I have a motion.
Second.
I have a second. Any comments on the question? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Lee. Waller.
Mayor, members of the board, I guess we're down to the last lap with the racetrack.
Oh, very good. Very good, Walter.
We're in the home stretch, you mean?
You could say that. This is the action to approve an abatement agreement from Bank of the West to abate the nuisance at the racetrack. and authorize the mayor to sign the abatement agreement. 2 weeks ago, we approved the letter of intent. Over the last 2 weeks, Joel Benton, Kevin Gaddis, and I have been negotiating with the attorney from Bank of the West, Dennis White, on this agreement. You have it in front of you. It's ready for your approval and for the mayor to sign. Incidentally, I can remember that day where the mayor, Mr. Livermore, and Mr. Warner, and myself pretty much set out this agreement with Alicia Anderson, Vice President of Real Estate for Bank of the West, and I appreciate the efforts of those three gentlemen. We basically had the Bank of the West step up, and through their efforts, they're putting in about $80,000 to $100,000 in this initial cleanup of the racetrack property. I've also had Mr. Staub has been calling me. Supervisors Aldean and Williamson have also called me throughout this process. Where do we stand on this? Where do we stand on this? When are they going to get started? You know, and things of this nature. So I know the board has followed this. Supervisor Livermore contacted me right after the 1st of January and says, we've got to step up. We've got to get going on this. And I think this is proof that the wheels of government, they may move slow, but they do move, and this is the last step. So we're ready for approval.
Thank you, Alder, and I want to thank you personally for assisting me in getting their attention. And once again, I want to say I tip my hat to the Bank of the West. They didn't need to do this. You know, at some point in time, the city may have got their investment of about $140,000 back, but this was absolutely the cleanest and the best way. And I want to thank Kevin Gaddis for the work you've done with the contractor. I see you've got an agreement ready to go with Canyon Creek for about $80,000. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah, and it looks like they're ready to go as soon as we say okay. Is that correct? Yes, sir. Kevin, come on. I don't know if you put a lot of time in this also.
Yes, he did. Incidentally, Mrs. Anderson will be up next week to tour the facility with Kevin to specifically go over the what needs to be done to complete the abatement of the nuisance. They anticipate giving the contractor the go-ahead, if I can impose upon Kathy to get the paperwork done today. If I can fax that to them today, they'll give the go-ahead to the contractor tomorrow to start the work as soon as possible.
Wonderful.
That's great. Yes. Kevin, step up there. I just wanted to give you, you've been working side by side with me and the rest of Walter and so forth, and you're pretty satisfied that this was the best way to go and they got a good, responsible contract?
I'm satisfied, Mayor.
Good. I just want to thank you once again for your work. I know you've had tours out there. You've helped us put it together. I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, Shelley, and then I'll go to Pete.
You know, and I have nothing but confidence that this will occur. I just noted that in the abatement funding agreement with Bank of the West, under paragraph 1 abatement contract, it says the commencement of the abatement work shall be set forth in the contract documents. I can't find it anywhere in the contract document. So,
that was your question.
And I understand. So once we have a definitive start date, Walt, we need to put that in the contract, the actual contract document, as is alluded to in the agreement.
I will be calling both Mrs. Anderson and Mr. White after this meeting to tell them of the action today. And I will insist that that date be put in the contract that we send down.
That's great. All right. Thanks, Paul.
Any other comments on this issue? Entertain a motion.
I'll do it. Mr. Mayor, I move to approve an abatement agreement from the Bank of the West to abate the imminent danger nuisance at the Schultz Ranch Racetrack, APN 311-64, and authorize the mayor to sign the abatement agreement.
Second.
Number motion and second. Any comments on the question? I have a comment. Come on up here.
For the record, Joe Ivan, resident of Carson City.
I need to comment on one thing. Mr. Mayor, if it wasn't for you and the time you spent pushing this as the mayor of this city, I sincerely doubt it would have been accomplished as fast as it has. Supervisors have supported you. There's no two ways about that. But knowing you and how you talk about our junkyard dog here, you're at least equal, if not much more tenuous. And for something like this to be done, I really have to compliment you on it, and I think you should take a lot of the credit. Okay. Not all the credit, I understand, because it's a teamwork, but for you to spearhead it with your title of our city, this is very important. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much for the kind words, but Travis, for the comments on the question, I just want everybody to know out there, this all got started with this gentleman to my left here, Mr. Livermore, who came into my office with a plethora of pictures how bad that was out there, and I didn't even know it was bad. So this is representative of how Carson City works. Pete got the ball rolling, then he used my office to play hardball, and we got Kevin involved, and it's just a matter of thank you, Joe, but it's called teamwork that makes this stuff happen. And we had to work with our DA's office so that I wouldn't get too far out of line, but it all started with Pete, and the end result is the community. We should have never been in this position in the first place. Maybe we learned something. And I just can't wait for those two developers to come before this board again for another project. But anyway, we'll let that be that as it may. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, what have we got next here? Oh, that's off. Okay.
Board of Mayor Supervisors, Sandy Scott, purchasing and contracts. And this is an action to accept 20 of the 31 work scopes for the Sheriff's Admin Building project as complete and release final payment. In July of 2006, the Board of Supervisors awarded a total of 31 trade contracts for the Sheriff's Admin Building. The building was done in two phases. The first building was construction of the new building and an off-site parking lot. Phase two was demolition of the old building and construction of a new parking lot. Phase one was substantially completed December 2007, and the Sheriff's Department was moved in the new building. Phase two was completed in August 2008. All work has been completed, all claims settled, and retention can be released for 20 of the 31 work scopes. Mr. Burnham will bring to the next board meeting when we complete the last 11 work scopes a cost analysis for the entire project.
So in other words, this is final.
This is final for 20 of the 31, and then when the next 11 are completed, we will bring that before the board.
How much is after 11 more, and then we're done?
Yes, sir.
And are you in charge of the money?
No, sir.
I want to know how much is left in that fund.
Right. Okay, the next meeting.
The next meeting, Mr. Burnham will bring a cost analysis.
Oh, we got a lot of money in that fund. Right. How much is it? Not that. Okay, let's go. Let's get this out of the way. When things are tight like they are, well, I'll tell you, you look at any area of possible funding and see who can get their dirty hands on it first. And
I'll let you know what the number is.
Right. It'll be the Larry Werner slush fund. Okay, let's go.
Mr. Mayor, I move to accept the work is completed to accept the contract summary as presented and approve the release of final payments in an amount of $632,282.34 for contract number 2005-176 titled Carson City Sheriff's Department Administrative Building Project to the 20 of the 31 trade contractors as listed in the staff summary.
Second.
I have a motion. I have a second. Any comments on the question? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries. Thank you very much. Okay.
Mayor, Board of Supervisors, Nick Providenti, Finance Director.
Good morning, Nick.
I'm just here to tell you that, thank God, 2008 is over for sales tax numbers. Actually, I just kind of wanted to go over the June numbers a little bit and then kind of talk a little bit about how the general fund, you know, finished the year. June was pretty bad. We had a decrease of 19.7% compared to June of 07. And I think it's important to note that June of 07 was a really good month. So we're comparing a bad month to a really good month. So June of 07 was actually up about 9% more than June of 06. So things started going bad, I guess, I don't know if this is a good
July.
Or not. Started going bad in July. So we're going to start comparing more of an apples and apples type comparison, I believe, in July. The whole state was just bad in June. State taxable sales were down 6%, Clark County down 3.3%, and Washoe County down 13.7%. The only really good news we had in Carson City was restaurants were up about 10.8%. So, if you look at the actual sales tax numbers, we ended up about 9.5% below the prior year, and we were projecting, I think, when we started all this, about 8% down. So we were a little worse than what we projected.
Equate that to revenue.
About $417,000. If you look at the next page.
Get on the right page.
If you look at the budget worksheet page.
Okay.
Where it says consolidated taxes, we projected $23.86 million, and we actually came in at about $23.44 million. So we're down about $417,000
over our budget. I mean,
over our estimate. We were probably $3.5 million less than we originally budgeted. But we had taken that all into consideration when we did our re-estimate in January. When we worked with Mary Walker, who had said, you know, we knew probably in August that we weren't going to hit the budget when we started seeing things.
But I think that's a significant number to remember, that when we went into 07 with our original budget, what we came out of 07 or 08
right.
was $3.5 million or more, less than what we went into it with.
Right, and that's
if as you look at the go ahead, continue on. Cause
okay, I just wanted to go ahead and just talk a little bit about how we ended. Basically, our revenues were almost $200,000 better than we thought, and most of that is probably the increases in investment income. We had some property tax increases compared to budget, and then just the various factors. Where we really did really well is in our expense control. We had about $1.2 million less in expenditures than we estimated. And then we didn't spend the contingency. I also want to note on that third page of that budget worksheet where we're showing the redevelopment transfer out of $2 million.
Yeah.
We didn't really actually do that. We're actually paying that bill tomorrow. So that's going to actually fall into fund balance. The general fund's been getting interest on that money up until it'll be tomorrow if they've been paying that.
Okay.
So we're actually expecting our fund balance to be about $1.8 million better than we estimated, and that's mainly due we didn't pay the contingency or we didn't have to spend any contingency funds about $500,000, and then we have a little bit better than expected overall revenues, and then about $1.2 million in expenses. We're a little bit less than.
You know, when you look at the expenditure or the revenues, our consolidated taxes number 417,000 dollars. Those are year to date.
That's correct.
That's the whole year. So we've been, you know, And you look at the next one on licenses and permits, we barely picked up $100,000.
Right.
Not even.
And I think on the licenses and permits, what we did is we took that number, that 775 wasn't the actual budget. I think we budgeted like $850,000 originally.
You know, and the biggest number in that area was gaming.
It was gaming, that's correct.
Where'd that money come from on permits? Licenses and permits.
Right.
I guess it's the revenue out of boatings. Had to be.
That could be.
Yeah. That's exactly where it is. Okay.
And
but then you look at our franchise fees, gas.
Yeah.
No, they didn't have winning machines. Okay. Well, then again, we're going to get a good hit because Silver Dollar added a lot more machines as they just are opening up. The area of franchise fees, whoa, we really took it.
Yeah, I think we probably overestimated a little bit on the gas and electric. We had been seeing increases in Sierra Pacific Power and in
they went sour.
Southwest Gas. And I think the Southwest Gas number, I think we raised the franchise fee and we didn't end up getting any the money until November.
They get the letter out.
We were going to get it in August.
The only one that went up was cable.
Cable.
And that was just very small.
Telephone's gone up.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, telephone.
The grant numbers we're still finalizing those as we speak. So,
you know,
they shouldn't be.
With this, I'm going to make a statement, and do you think I'm saying that what we're going to get the end of this month in a few days, you get our July numbers.
Right.
We had a miserable July, and that's when I became alarmed. And if, in fact, and we projected in our 08-09 budget a 3% decrease over last year, is that correct?
We projected a 3% decrease, but then we added back some of the new stores that we were getting.
So what are we at?
Home Depot, and then some of the other folks. So we projected we.
So you projected flat.
Flat.
Okay.
With the new stores.
On this upcoming fiscal year, and we know how miserable July was of last year.
Right.
And if you know, right now we're making money off Mervyn's because they're having a hell of a sale as they go south on us.
We'll get them for 3 months, probably.
And then, bingo, they'll come back and eat up anything we'll get out of Burlington.
The Harbor Freight.
Harbor Freight's open, isn't it?
We didn't take that into account in the budget.
Okay. Well, regardless of this, the point is that the revenue stream that we get for July, over last July, if that thing is another double-digit drop, God help us, because that trend is going to, we haven't bottomed out, is what it does. I'm just hoping that we can hold our numbers, because through this fiscal, or Larry, you're going to have a real big job in front of you.
Yeah. What we're looking at now is, again, is like we talked, we'll give you the quarter evaluation probably July, August, September, so somewhere probably toward the end of October, first of November. We'll give you a full quarter analysis of where we're at with all the revenues, all funds.
Yeah.
And it'll give you an indication. The only thing we won't have again, though, is still more current
month's worth of
sales tax. So,
yeah, that's it's hard for us, you know, because we go on a fiscal year and we're getting data 2 months late, and it's just very hard.
Critical data, because everything else, I think, we can probably project fairly closely.
But you can't without that sales tax number. It's hard.
Right.
You know, all I do is, you know, I call up different automobile dealers and so forth, and what was your month here, without getting, are you up, are you down? I think our residents are really in a tough times now compared to the past. At least that's what I'm getting. And we'll just have to see what happens in July, but Larry, it's going to be an indicator to you.
Well, yeah, and we're looking at the real numbers now. So, for example, a percentage loss will translate into dollars. You know, before we've been looking at trends, and so now we have to look at trends and dollars, and that'll start impacting. If we see that the trends are going down, then we can look, working with finance, to determine what's the real dollar impact to our budget and, you know, how significant is that? What do we do with it? So we can.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I'm concerned with the national news, the national economy. The consumer is very shy about spending money right now. And I'm just only hoping that we get something positive coming around, at least from the big picture, and you know, that affects everyone. Credit is going to be tough. home-to-home sales are going to be tough because of mortgages. Probably won't exist. If they exist, they're going to exist with the stringent regulations of making sure you've got 25% or something like that liquid assets to put forth to the good. It is not a good economic time right now, okay. So well, not to be said the less.
Well, interesting enough, though, if you look at we should be sending out the building department information to you. Where we're at today is almost $20 million over where we were last year this time in building valuations for which we've issued permits for. It's a huge increase, and the business licenses are up for almost 15-20%. So we're seeing a huge increase in the areas that we thought we wouldn't see any increases. So it's kind of like polish up your crystal ball. It's hard to tell what really is going to impact. And I think some of the conversations we've had with the car dealers have been that the August information was booming for them.
Yeah, July was bad.
But July was bad, but then August was really good. So it's kind of like, all right, where do you draw the line?
We do have the Home Depot also that we didn't have last year.
Right.
And then Harbor Freight's coming on, and Harbor Freight, I think, is going to be all new money. I mean, we don't have anything
like that.
They have
no competition. Well, you know, part of it is people taking advantage of the economic downturn. I mean, because things are cheaper, therefore they're making investments that they wouldn't ordinarily make. So,
but we do have. I mean, the good news is that we do have money that we're carrying forward from last year. So, I mean, I think we're going to have to decide what we want to do with that money. I mean.
$1.8 million?
$1.8 million, right. I mean, whether or not we want to hold on to some of it.
I'm not going to be around here in a couple of months, but I just say that right now, you just got to hold for and see what's really where and how we're going to go nationally. Everybody's after the elections, things are going to pick up. Well, I don't have a crystal ball. But I just don't want those July numbers to go real negative on us. It's going to be a signal that, you're not going to like. Okay, with that, let's keep moving here.
Okay, and then I just have some of the sales tax figures at the back.
Right.
Last, so that's really all that I have.
Any comments by the audience on Nick's report? Any comments by the board? Thank you, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
One thing.
Go ahead.
I did ask Nick just briefly, and we do have investments in the stock market, but there is no exposure for those investments. Is that correct, Nick? The bonds and the...
I don't think that we have investments in the stock market.
I'm sorry, but in financial.
Yeah. We had very, very minor, very minor investments. And I know Al Kramer, our treasurers...
I asked Al to prepare a memo for you folks because we did have some invested in some of the corporation stocks. There was a little bit of a blip there. He's looking at the impact of that.
Right.
Trying to figure out what that is, so he will let you know.
Minor investments in Lehman bonds,
right.
I believe.
Right.
But the state, he was worried more about the LGIP in the state investing in that, but they didn't have anything invested in that.
I wonder what the hell PERS is doing. Boy, I'll tell you, that's scary. Okay, city manager.
The next item, Mr. Mayor, is the monthly report. I've got nothing new to add to it other than the fact that it shows you the positions that we're still kind of hanging tight on and those that we're filling. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer any.
Larry, right, so total of what we've frozen or out of the budget and what you got open amounts to what? How many?
I can't. It's a fluctuating figure. The ones that we froze, and we suspended. Those are still suspended.
That's 30. How many?
That's 32.
32 positions, and then we run with some open positions.
Yeah, we've got some open that are still staying open. We'll do evaluations of that. Whether we will refill those or hold them for a while. If it's a public safety issue, we automatically start the process to refill.
Right. Are you moving any, you know, you're holding that number, but are you starting to juggle openings as they come up yet?
No, we're still holding. We did have the departments go through the prioritization of how the replacement ought to occur, what kind of priority manner it should, but we've not done that yet because we're not refilling anybody other than the public safety positions.
All right. Go ahead.
Minor savings, obviously, from the vacancies that are...
Larry, the list of positions here. Remember that arrangement that the budget provided for the sheriff to give substantial raises to three individuals by eliminating three positions?
Correct.
Well, why do we show them in here as positions that may be considered for as whenever time's come around of restoring those positions?
Because if the budget comes back, we would restore them.
Well, do we adjust the salaries then? No. Because that's how you paid those salary increases.
No, it'd be back. We'd be back before you. If the revenues come back, if the economy gets better, and the sheriff wishes to replace those, then he would come back, and we would replace those at the salary that was proposed for him. Right now, we did it because we had the money to do that. That's how we got those paid.
But the salary is proposed for, you'll manage that.
Right.
Because when those positions were eliminated, the salary ranges went away.
That's true. That's true. Again, that's the upper list, Pete, the two first two pages that shows those positions being held. If all the revenues start coming back into the city, then we'll go through that list to start restoring positions. And those positions will come up to that at some point.
But that'll be a board action.
Be a board action, yeah.
Okay, in other words, as you restore positions in the future,
it has to be a budget.
It has to be approved by this board.
Right. There has to be a budget.
That's as it should be.
Well, but that takes me back to my point about the budget. I approved that rearrangement, and I didn't know it because the budget was in that big package that was embedded in the discussion of that.
Right.
It was not singled out
right. That
that arrangement was going to take place.
No, and as we've talked, as you get the next year's budget, we'll add more information in there so those decisions can be made up front and you'll see them. You know, again, we kind of shifted where we were the previous year. We added more information and tried to clarify that. We still have more information we will provide you in the following years. But you will have that as a conscious decision, and it will be in front of you so you can make that decision.
Okay. Thank you, Larry. What's the next item?
The next item is again, it's the unclassified resolutions, and I don't know whether or not I sent out the wrong resolution or not, but we do have some errors in there that need to be fixed again. It's just one of these things that never goes away. What I did is I brought back to you the item was the fact that we would eliminate any kind of a performance increase for meets expectations. And, however, I didn't take it out of the resolution. So we need to correct that. So where it says standard performance, you know, that in the resolution we would go to 0%. And then the other thing I added into the resolution was public guardian. As it turns out, the Board of Supervisors has four direct employees. It's myself, the city auditor, the chief of Department of Alternative Sentencing, and the public guardian. So this resolution would cover...
Is Rory under us?
Yes. Yes. You did an agreement March of last year that basically said that you would allow the courts to supervise Rory's position, but everybody recognizes that Rory is an employee of the board.
Does this mean, because way, way, way back when I started alternative sentencing, it was under...
No, statutes require that it's by the Board of County Commissioners. Whenever you do, the Department of Alternative Sentencing is created within a county, it is a...
But they're going to evaluate, they're going to do all the...
No, he has to come before you. And we're
for his salary?
For his salary.
Or any position?
And it's for his salary, for his performance evaluation, all of those kinds of things is the board responsible.
There's something wrong with that picture.
Well, it's a statute. Yeah, so there's not much we can change.
Good old legislature. Okay.
Yeah. So what I said in the resolution is that these benefits would cover all unclassified employees plus the four of us.
All right.
So and then I think Shelley had some corrections that we also need to make too.
Larry, I had a quick question. Under retirement, it says the city shall adjust unclassified employee salaries in accordance with NRS 286. That provision of NRS relates to PERS, and then it says Carson City will comply with all policies for the Nevada Public Employees Retirement System. It seems a little redundant.
It is.
Okay. But
I think what it's saying is that for the retirement, you get the Public Employees Retirement System, we'll follow all the rules, and whatever they change, then we'll make those corrections. Okay.
And then as you and I discussed, under annual leave, we need to add Public Guardian.
Right.
We need to amend Section L to eliminate the 2% for standard performance.
Correct.
Under general benefits, we need to add Public Guardian, and that's it.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Excuse me?
Oh, yeah, and when we sent that out as late material, we added a queue that made the effective date July 1st of 2008. That came out as late material. So there's a paragraph queue of the resolution.
Okay.
Yes, and that was the only change was to...
Larry, your comment about the four employees that the board has?
Yes.
We've always done the performance evaluation of the city manager.
So it's going to be evidently our responsibility now to evaluate the three remaining. The chief of alternative sentencing, and
I would think
I don't think we've ever done that.
Never.
I don't think so either.
So is that something we want to continue to have to do, or can we modify the language to allow it to?
Let me check with the district attorney's office and see how we look at the statutes.
We've never done.
No, same with the court guardian. Right. We've done it with the auditor. Yeah.
Well, and the reason you haven't done it is because you do have an agreement with the courts. But it's something that we do need to look at, and it's in addition to some other personnel issues.
All right.
And if we can't, what we'll try to do, obviously, you know, you don't want to be involved in a lot of that stuff.
We can't be. I mean, how the hell
are we going to do?
Well, I understand that. I understand that, but I'm kind of just the messenger in this mess. But we're trying to sort it out because it really is convoluted, and we're trying to sort out whether or not that's something that you can negotiate away.
And if delegate.
If you can, if the statutes allow that to occur, and if that's fine.
Well, who in the hell's going to check? It's.
Well, it never is a problem until it's a problem. So I guess my role is. What I want to do is be able to give you what are the bookends, and you can make the decision how you want to do it. But you at least ought to know the decision you make is a legal decision or not. So, anyway, hate to drag you through all that, but again, I don't write the statutes. And that is the end of item 12B with the corrections.
I have one further question.
Larry, on management leave?
Yes.
What do you estimate the percent of cash that will come in July 1 of each day? In other words, this is not a use it or lose it policy. This is if you don't use it, we'll pay you up to 1 week.
Yeah, what we're going to do is we looked at the fiscal impact of adding that, of everybody taking the cash out. So we looked at the fiscal impact of that. And that was the fiscal impact.
What might that cost us?
I think it was about, Nick, I need to look to 2% of the unclassifieds would be maybe about 80.
And where's that budgeted at, the budget?
It's what we're proposing in here is when the memo I send you in the 3%, it's all wrapped up in that 160-some thousand that we're proposing on the next item.
Yeah. All right. I didn't want to see a downturn someplace where it's $150,000 worth of a block of money that goes out at this time.
No,
we're trying to figure what to recoup it at.
What we don't know, what we do is we trade off the 2.5% that was the performance evaluation. We actually save 0.5% if you assume that if the majority of people would have gotten standard evaluations, then we've actually saved about 0.5%. So we're taking away that to replace it with the 2%.
I understood that all well.
But. Now, that assumes that there's going to be a majority of the standard evaluations.
I can count the unclassified out there waiting to see what the hell we're going to do here, right? You guys looking out for yourselves? Good job.
Now,
got a whole band of them just sitting there saying, go, go, go.
The other thing I need to do is work with Jennifer on, because what I've done here is created a compaction problem for the future. This is not, I mean, we're trying to do some things that they may need totally. We don't know what long-term impact is, so I want to sit down with Jennifer and say, okay, if the CCA is allowed to raise for just being there, at some point then it's going to start crashing up against the unclassifieds who we're saying aren't not going to get necessarily salary increases, because the 2% is a cash bonus, does not increase their base pay. It doesn't account for any of the PERS contributions or any of this
Larry,
stuff. So,
Larry, let's just get this going, because you're talking down the line, and you know, I'll be honest with you, as I think I'm much interested in that. So let's go.
Okay.
Resolution number is 2008-R44.
Okay, I move to rescind resolution number 2001-R6 and to adopt resolution number 2008-R44 regarding unclassified personnel, including the public guardian, chief of alternative sentencing, internal auditor, and city manager, subject to the changes noted on the record.
Second.
I have a motion. I have a second. Any comments on the question?
Aye. All those in favor?
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries.
All right.
Okay, the next item.
Finally.
Item 12C, that's the one we're actually spending money. This is where I'm proposing we have a 3% cost of living for the unclassifieds, and that the fiscal impact is that I've stated in there. It's about $248,000 for this year. It was not in the original budget, but we did receive in anticipated revenues that we will cover this cost with, and that was, again, the materials from the landfill, the surplus metals, and it was additional property tax that we hadn't anticipated.
All right.
And this does not include elected officials or the judiciary, right? Does not include elected officials or the judiciary.
There's two questions. The first one is, I cannot remember this for sure, but the department heads did not receive any pay raise last year. I don't know whether other unclassifieds did.
Yeah.
Myself, you, Stacy. No, well, that's another question. My question right now is, no. Nick, different question. Let's get this clear.
Nick, you want to get up here?
Yeah, come up here, because the question I'm asking, Nick, is that did last year the unclassifieds get a cost of living increase?
Yes.
Yes.
The department heads did not, though.
I think all unclassifieds.
All of them did.
I think we have a fifth.
I was not a department head, so I don't know, but yeah. I remember Linda took an action on it.
Yeah, but I thought the department did not. So, yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
We'll double check.
What we're doing is trying to take all the unclassifieds and give them the same COLA that we've given to everybody else. Right?
Yes.
Then let's just do it.
Now, the second question was on judicial.
Except for those ones that those
statutorily,
and also the ones that have already had their sheriff's positions.
Yes, those are not included either. The judicial. I asked the judges to give me a letter on what they would request for the employees that are under their control.
Yeah.
And the indication is 3% would be fine for them too. So I asked for that. We'll bring that back at the next meeting to include their employees.
Why? Those people are unclassified.
Right.
The judges, when we do unclassified, we do the unclassifieds for the whole city. Well, why do we need the judges to bless it?
Because they set the salary compensation for their employees. We don't. It's a little bit of a, again, one of the
You don't either? But they do. There's something wrong with that picture, pal.
Well,
I mean, there's something wrong with that picture.
Again, that's one of those issues we're working on. We're still trying to solve that one, too.
Jesus, we got five unions, and now we got the judges. I mean, this is absolute madness. I'll tell you, if you're a corporation and you're the CEO, I'm going, I don't know what the hell's going on out there, but who's getting what?
Well, from a financial budgeting standpoint, we treat them all the same, so we are doing this. But from a who can authorize it standpoint, we're trying to make sure we're following the rules. So that's what we're trying to do.
I understand what you're trying to do, Larry.
Yeah.
But, boy, I'll tell you, it's about as convoluted. Look at the, excuse me, Cal, I'm going to make a point. The media's not here. Who gives a damn?
Davis.
I'm sorry, Dave. Dave, what can I tell you?
You're a fixture, Dave.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 3, 2, 4, 2, 5, 10, 6, 10, 7, 28. 28 unclassifieds, and I can't believe, and the judges are going to tell me.
Now, again, understand. Well, understand. When we do the budget, we have already figured those in there. So
I know you have, Larry, but the point is, what if they don't? Yeah, I've been up here where they demand this and they demand that.
Yeah, we're trying to work through that. We're trying to make it more formal so that we begin to understand what the controls are.
Well, I'm just I'm a lame duck, but boy, I'm telling you, this is pure bullshit. And let's go take a motion.
Could I do it? I move to approve the 3% cost of living increase for unclassified personnel and for the positions of public guardian, chief of alternative sentencing, internal auditor, and city manager effective July 1, 2008, with the exception that the five supervisory deputy sheriff positions do not receive this adjustment as their salaries adjust in July 2008, which did reflect the cost of living adjustment.
Have a motion.
Second.
I have a second. Any comments on the question? Any comments on the question? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. See, you can all walk it out here happy as a clam. You know, it's done. All right. Supervisor, go ahead.
You know, we used to have a tradition where people were recognized for years of service, and I'd like to bring that back because I think it's important to use that as a way of maintaining morale. And I just want to note this was in a recent health and wellness update that Ray Salo with the Sheriff's Department is celebrating his 30th year.
Shelley, we're going to bring all of those back.
Okay,
we're going to go
all
back.
Right.
And, because we can't figure out why it stopped either. So in talking with Jennifer, it's one of the conversations we had yesterday, is to go back from the last time we did that and recognize everybody that's had service, you know, reached service points, 5, 10, 15 years, those that have retired.
Why don't we just, you don't need to do 5. I mean,
we'll do it all. We'll do it all.
Are you, why do you want to do 5?
Well, let's start with 10.
Yeah. Start with 10.
We could go back to look at whatever the previous was. I don't know. We could go
well,
back.
Well, as long as there's some recognition.
We haven't recognized the retired employees either.
No, and in fact, I wanted that. I'm glad you brought that up because Cheryl Adams, I encouraged her to come here, as Catherine did, to address the board and to receive some accolades. You know, she obviously has been with purchasing and contracts for a long time, but she is a 29-year employee. And has kind of just faded into the background, you know, unceremoniously. And I think it's important that we recognize people who have been of service to the city.
And we're going to try to contact. The only last thing I want to bring up, then we can go to the closed session, is that on next Thursday, I believe at noontime, we're having a special meeting. It's a very quick meeting to award the FAA grant.
3 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
I understand. Yeah, it should be okay. So just real.
Just as long as you have a quorum.
Yeah.
I'm on my way to here.
I'll be here.
Okay. Are you going to be here?
Yeah.
Next Thursday. Are you?
Richard,
no. You will not. Okay.
Well, on the way to the airport.
Okay. As long as we got 3, it doesn't make any difference. It's just a formality. Any other comments? Okay. With that, I'll take an action to adjourn, and then we'll go into closed session.
So moved.
I have a motion. I have a second. We're out of here.